Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. Produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
Welcome to the PR Moment podcast. On the show today, we're revealing six themes from Amex's recent measurement summit. And to reveal those trends, we have the founder of the Experienced Media Analysts and Amex board member, Steph Bridgman. And for those of you that don't know, Amex is the International Association for the Measurement and Evaluation of Communication. And alongside Steph, we've got Richard Bagnell, who's co-managing partner at Karma and is also an Amex board member. Before we start, if you haven't taken a look already, the final entry deadline for the Creative Moment Awards is Friday the 30th of June. And I should say thanks so much to our PR Moment podcast sponsors, the PRCA. Steph and Richard, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Great to be here.
An absolute pleasure, folks. So we've got these six themes coming out from the conference in Miami that I think you attended last week, wasn't it? But before we start, how was Miami? Was it fun?
Bienvenida at Miami, baby, as John has said when she opened the conference. It was amazing. It was lovely to get us out of the misery and the cold of the UK, drag us across the Atlantic. First time Amex had been to America. What a great city Miami was. And I have to say, content-wise, the conference really was one of Amex's best. What did you think, Steph?
Yeah, it was warm and welcoming as ever. It's just the joy to be amongst a community of fellow comms measurement professionals. We're such a nerdy, unique bunch, and we all club together when we're in the same room. So it was lovely to be amongst friends.
There's nothing quite like an Amex disco. Right, so come on then, Steph, your first theme, if I may. You were it's around. Well, go on. Yeah, you tell us. What's your first theme coming out of the Miami Amex show?
The theme speaks actually to the theme of the whole conference, which is about earned media is value, not vanity for brands. And it really was picking up on the manifesto that Matt Neal from Golin put out to us in his opening keynote speech. He enthused us about the role that earned can play within that Payzo space. It was fascinating to hear some of his insights around how paid are paying so much more now for ever decreasing audiences. And it really is the time now for earn to have a much more strategic role at the table. So I think that was the thread that ran through the whole event, value, not vanity. But he really set us off with almost a sort of political rallying cry of the impact that we can help brands to demonstrate from their comms activities.
Yeah, we come. But I've been doing there's a good story to tell on the power of earned, isn't there? And I mean, I know we're going to talk about some specifics as we go through the show, but that the return on investment of earned media is really, really good, isn't it? And we should just make that big, but probably not that point we don't really shout about enough, I suspect.
He gave us a quote from Finola McDonald, who's the global CMO of the FT, which really resonated with me. And the quote was, it's a huge opportunity for PR to take the lead. This point that Steph's just made about paid getting more expensive, it's apparently four times more expensive than 5 years ago, means that brands just simply can't afford to put paid first anymore. And that with the credibility and the extra trust that earned earns for a brand and an organization, it really is time that earned goes first. Not least, as the geeks inherit the earth, and we move from just measuring tactical activity to looking at strategy as well, we can come out with those data points that help inform campaigns to come up with something that really resonates and succeeds as well. It was a fantastic opening to the conference.
And should we just talk about that integration piece now then? Because there's clearly the danger with public relations and PR people is that they always seem to be on or see themselves be on the back foot a bit with data and analysis. There you go, tripped over my words there. But that's what we're trying to get out there is that doesn't need to be the case. I'm never quite sure whether that's because our data tends to be a bit better than we think or whether it's because the advertisers' data isn't quite as good as they'd like us to think.
I think that all boils down to confidence in the data, doesn't it? And paid and advertising friends have had that swagger and confidence for perhaps past 50 years, and our swagger and confidence is nascent, but we need to move forward with that more confident step to be able to, you know, bringing in, for example, earned media's contribution in econometric models, for example, you can really see the impact that earned can have on a multidisciplinary comms campaign. And I think we need to be bolder and be more confident in trusting the data that we're providing to our clients and organisations. And they should be bolder in taking from it the impact that earned can really play in the marketing mix as well.
Okay. I should leave that one there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I was just going to agree with Steph. It is about confidence. I think our other marketing brethren have this confidence, largely due to large click attribution, which they claim all of. And we, as PR professionals, sort of cower and think that it's too difficult. Matt made a rallying call for us also, everyone in the industry. It's time now to move away from the bullshit metrics, those vanity metrics, the counts and amounts, he did it in a very humorous way, but AVEs as well, by having a joke campaign that we should create SAVE, which was going to be SAVE for the advertising value equivalent. Of course, he was being hugely ironic. But time to move away from those bullshit metrics and take our rightful place that comes from confidence.
Right. I'm sure we'll come back onto that integrated measurement theme a bit later on as we go through these key themes coming out of the Amex Measurement Summit 2023. But Richard, what was the theme that you would the next theme that you'd like to highlight?
Well, I don't think we could have a conference in 2023 without talking about the impact of AI. It's absolutely white hot at the moment. I was able to moderate a session on it, and we covered all kinds of topics. We talked about the practical application of AI in PR, and particularly in monitoring and measurement. So that ranges from things like identifying relevant content, helping with Boolean search strings, making them a thing of the past. You can summarize content, you can code the content, it can write reports, it can even write your Excel queries for you, and it can even write your PowerPoint documents. So the benefits are significant in terms of time. We explored on the panel whether the benefits were for the agencies saving time and therefore saving money, or whether those benefits really were being passed on to the PR and comms practitioners. And we also highlighted a lot of the issues and the risks that everybody needs to be aware of. So there are issues around the black box of AI. Even the creators of it don't quite understand how it works. It's been shown frequently to make substantial errors, to hallucinate, to have bias. There's an issue around confidentiality. Often with the prompt engineering, you need to upload a load of private information, which then is absorbed and becomes part of the data set. There are issues around licensing as well. So it's a really hot topic that I think before people go rushing into, we need to all make sure we fully understand.
It points to the different types of skills we need as practitioners also when dealing with these new technologies. The need for us to continue to be sceptical with the data that's spewed back out at us, to that point that Richard made about not really knowing what's gone in, so really can you trust what's come out? The importance of critical thinking in professional practice. I was really inspired by a conversation I also had with Jim Murphy from the University of Connecticut, who also did an interesting speech later in the day, didn't he, around ethics and the way in which he asks his students to use tools such as ChatGPT to support them actually in their academic work, but actually that frees up their time to further develop their critical thinking skills. And I think that this is one of the areas that all of us in our profession, in the analytics profession, but also in the PR profession, need to hone our critical thinking skills and learn how to ask better questions to get better answers.
And he made a great point, which is a quote from the Washington Post, which said the bulk of future content on the internet will be produced by AI. In turn, this content will train the next family of generative AI tools. And that really got me thinking, where are we heading with this? And I think a lot of the times people say, it's okay because humans are going to be the critical thinkers adding value. We'll sit at a level above. And there was a conversation there as well around, well, what happens when AI takes the low-level, entry-level jobs? Who's going to train the people who are going to come in with the experience in a few years' time? And if you can sort of put that on steroids by saying the Gen Zers today are probably the most insular group that we've ever had in terms of their you know, their smartphones, their gaming, their social networking, and their people skills, which is really what sets us apart, are perhaps the weakest of many generations. So I think, you know, fascinating times for AI, PR, and especially the monitoring and evaluation of it.
Just to go back on the, because I mean, I get it, right? There's a huge number of AI challenges in society, clearly in public relations, both for the in-house guys and the agency model. Just to bring it back to measurement for a moment, just summarize briefly for me that where we're at with AI measurement, because for many, many years, we've been having this conversation about, it's not new, AI measurement. We've been having this conversation probably about 10 years. And probably slowly but surely the accuracy of the AI measurement has increased, but it still needed humans basically to check it, for want of a better phrase. Where are we in that game currently?
Well, I would say it's a wholesale change is what's happened. I think for the last 10 years, what's been called AI has largely been a misnomer. It's been machine learning, natural language processing. It's basically been very good automation by very good software that is able to identify words, perhaps topics, perhaps entities, and cluster them together. What we've got now is the ability to very quickly write, and it's this generative AI concept. It's the ability to write and create based on that input to turn it into an output at scale. The issue is that the outputs can be full of errors. You know, we talked a bit about hallucinating, and those who don't know what it's doing will make mistakes. So, for example, people don't realize that things like ChatGPT, certainly until just now, and some of the plugins can't browse the internet. Now, if you put into ChatGPT, summarize this URL, you will get a summary that looks like a summary of the article back. But what people didn't realize was that that was summarizing the keywords it was seeing in the URL, and it wasn't going and looking at the article at all. So you might get a summary of something that's completely irrelevant to the article. To summarize an article, you need to copy and paste the article. And of course, at that point, you're getting into these issues around copyright licensing. And of course, if you're prompting with a client's brief, privacy issues as well. You know, if you've got a client in a crisis,
yeah. But just on the yeah. measurement piece, that's quite interesting, isn't it? So what you're saying is, it's from a measurement and monitoring perspective, it's much, much closer and better than it was, but it's not quite there still.
It's incredibly powerful and incredibly impressive. It just needs strong guardrails,
okay.
And I think people need to be really careful about what they're playing with, because if you don't check literally everything, it's so compelling with what it produces that you think it's just must be right. And the temptation with huge volumes of content is just to let it flow.
Yeah.
But if you don't check it, then critical mistakes will come in.
And just briefly, I was just going to bring in copyright. Do you want to go for that one, Steph? Because that's a really interesting part of that debate as well, isn't it?
Not my hottest topic on the copyright, because I've been in a position to mainly focus on the research side of it, which has been less prone to concerns around copyright than perhaps colleagues in the media monitoring space. So I'm probably not.
So the issue with copyright is to, if you want it to code an article or to summarize an article, you need to upload the article into the tool. When you upload the article into the tool absorbs the article, and it then goes into its data set for future. So content that is copyrighted is now within the body of general content, but also that content that's copyrighted is not yours to give away anyway. So there's that issue too. I think we saw it, didn't we, with one of the image bank, was it Getty Images, where some of the image generative AI was actually creating, if you told it, produce an executive sitting at a desk working on a laptop, it was actually putting in part of the Getty Images logo into part of the picture, because clearly what they'd done was, as the training data, they'd taken whole rafts of copyrighted images, which were then being regurgitated. There's an issue there as well for creators, which is if you're a photographer and your content has been taken to train these tools are then going to be used to put you out of business. So yeah, effectively, they've stolen your content and then turning it against you to harm your business. And I think, you know, could say the same for PR and comms as well.
Well, and publishers. I mean, there's a huge can of worms that is going to have to be opened, and it's going to have to be regulated, because at the moment, as a publisher, the one little bit I get is maybe a bot coming onto my website for some traffic. Well, that's going to, I mean, we're not an ad driven model, so it's irrelevant to me. But that for most other publishers, that is the one benefit of a lot of these of Google and search, isn't it? Whereas generative AI is going to take that away.
Yeah, well, that bot could become hostile to you. It could be nicking your content.
Yeah. It's and at that point, I would imagine publishers will just say, "Well, I don't want my site to be trawled." That's what I would do. But that's an interesting one to watch. I'm going to move things on to Richard. I think it's your turn. Your next lesson or theme, I should say, coming out of Miami.
Well, reassuringly for me, with my AMEC hat on, and as the guy who led on the work of the AMEC framework, it was that, to use a nerdy language, program logic models are here to stay. So there was a brilliant, brilliant session led by distinguished Professor Jim McNamara of the University of Technology in Sydney. Jim is one of the top academics, but from a commercial background, who has this incredible ability to make the complex seem digestible and easily understandable. And Jim, you know, to summarize it succinctly, was basically talking about that if we want to demonstrate our measurement journey, we have to move beyond outputs to outcomes to show our value. Of course, showing value is more important now than ever before. We must, as an industry, as a PR and comms industry, avoid substitution error. What does he mean by that? He means confusing output metrics, so stuff that happens within content, with outcomes. And he said the easy way to think about that for everybody listening is an outcome is what happens to our target audience, and output metrics is what happens in the media or whatever it is, wherever it is that we generate some content. So let's not confuse those vanity metrics, counts and amounts, favorability, media influence, impact scores, those type of things, with actual impact on our target audience. So he said, think target audience first. And if we want to demonstrate value, we've got to do that. And for the listeners who want to know how to do it, AMEX free resource, the integrated evaluation framework, is the global best practice. It's all available on AMEX website. If you Google it, you'll find plenty of links. And it was really great for me to see how many people are basing their measurement around that, ranging from, we had a fabulous talk as well from NATO, talking about how they're using the framework and their measurement approach, when the number one metric that matters to them is, do we wake up and feel safe in our beds in the morning?
Right. Steph, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I'm just delighted to be here with Richard, who was there at the forefront at the start of the launch of the Integrated Evaluation Framework, which I'm sure is probably over 10 years ago now. I can't quite remember.
2016.
Okay, yeah, perhaps we're getting there. But also recently launched a tutorial to support those in the industry who want to have some hands-on experience and how to put that into practice. I think some of the workshops that we do and the educational work we do at AMEC, which is top of mind and one of the key things we do, is to educate the industry and to demystify some of the phrasing there. So I sometimes think of that difference between outputs, outtakes and outcomes as, well, what do we see? What do people see? What do people think? And what do they do? So if you think about it in terms of categorizing your metrics and those kind of buckets, it can help demystify it. But yeah, lots of really great examples from Jim's session and from many of the other speakers from international organizations, ranging from NATO to United Nations.
And just to dig into that integrated framework a little bit more, Steph, I mean, one of the things that is so exciting about public relations at the moment is that the breadth of work that is increasing that PR people are doing, both in-house and agency side. Do you see that when you're looking at how people are using the framework, that the breadth of work and therefore the breadth of KPIs that are being used has increased over the last few years?
Absolutely. And if you look at the taxonomy on the AMEC website that sits behind the framework, you will see a range of metrics that actually take it beyond just content related metrics, because producing content is just one element of what we do in the comms industry. Sometimes it's about counting what's not there as well as what is there. And sometimes it's not about coverage. It's about bombs on seats at events or webinars. Well,
and trust and things like that, right? So,
The framework was designed in that way to appeal to organizations of all shapes and sizes, whether they're NGOs, whether they're B2B or B2C, and with all manner of different budgets as well. And the tutorial recently launched by AMEC will help demystify that and give some concrete examples of how it's been adopted by organizations of all shapes and sizes.
But broadly, if you're trying to, for anyone who hasn't seen it, if you're trying to sell stuff, or on one side of the spectrum, to you're trying to uphold your organization's reputation, those levels of KPIs across outtakes, outcomes, you'll word it better than I do, Steph, you can work your way through those within that integrated framework, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's beyond just media coverage. Media coverage is just one of the many activities that you do within in a comms or PR department. So why only judge your performance, as we perhaps used to many decades ago when Richard and I first worked together solely on media coverage, but actually on many other activities and outputs too.
Sure. Huge kudos to Steph and her team, because Steph led on that work that put the tutorial for the framework together, and it's a fantastic resource. Steph, I think it's free, is it not? Is it free?
I believe it's a member benefit, that one.
Member benefit, okay.
Now, AMEC have been on the phone since we finished recording this podcast, and I'm delighted to say that PR Moment has negotiated free access to a couple of their tutorials. The first one is their tutorial around their AMEC integrated evaluation framework. And the second tutorial that we've got you free access to, is their Foundation in Media Measurement and Evaluation course. Do take a look at the show notes of this podcast, where you can grab the links to those tutorials, and also the discount code, but it's the code to give you free access. I think they would normally cost 150 quid or something along those lines. So it's quite a significant saving that AMEC have generously given PR Moment listeners access to those, only available for 60 days or so. So if you fancy having a look at those, do check them out, but get a wriggle on, because we haven't got access for an unlimited period. It's only, as I say, for 60 days or so. So go on. Well, I missed one out, Steph, didn't I? I did two themes coming out of AMEC Summit from Richard, and you had one around data storytelling, I think.
I think this is where one of the best data visualizations of the whole session came from, because I like dogs as much as Johnny Bentwood likes dogs. And there was a particular chart, which was a picture of dogs' bums, which really stuck in my mind. And maybe we can share that image with you as well to share with the audience. But it's something that it's a skill that I've definitely gained over the years. And one of the hardest things to do, the ability to distill a whole campaign and maybe analysis of tens or hundreds of thousands of pieces of content or other data points into three succinct bullet points that mean something, which are not just interesting, but useful. Have I remembered that right, Richard? It needs to be useful as well as
interesting. It needs to be useful, not just interesting, exactly.
It would be true.
Well, of course, it's always got to be true. One starts from that at the beginning. Truth is very important, but it's the ability for us to, or the reminder for us as data storytellers here on the analytics side, to not do it, you know, have a data puke in our reports, and perhaps to distill all of that work into perhaps one chart or three charts or three bullet points. That comes with a certain skill. Actually, it's sometimes harder to write in a short way as it is to write in a long way. But Johnny's talk was just, you know, always electrifying. He has a wonderful way of communicating, and there were some other brilliant data visualizations within his session as well about piles of Lego organized into different colors. you know, creating a little house which is telling a story, but actually.
But your central point is, I suppose, is that intersection between data and creating a visual out of it is the. And do you mean that in a reporting context for within the organisation and within the comms team?
Yeah, specifically in the reporting context, that, you know, our clients are time poor and need to just get to the crux of the insight in a very simple way. I think that comes from increased confidence in the data and knowing which of the perhaps many 50 different data points in a quarterly or annual report or monthly report is perhaps the most important point. And that also comes from putting yourself in the client's shoes, I think, as one of the key themes coming through in many of the sessions at the Amex Summit, is to tell the story and gather the insight from the point of view of the client and how they can report inward and upwardly. So, yeah, I thought that was a really fascinating takeaway.
And data storytelling is a skill in itself, right? I mean, it's not easy. It's unlikely that the same person who is an analyst, my goodness, of the data and the PR person is also going to be brilliant at creating a fantastic graphic, right?
No, but if we also think to some of the other points that were made in terms of PR people's own confidence in the data points they have, we've got to remember that PR people are great storytellers. So why can't they be great data storytellers? I don't understand where there's sometimes a disconnect when PR people say, I don't like the data, I don't like the comms, I don't do maths,
I suppose I just think it's, you know, I can tell stories with words, be those text or audio. If you ask me to produce a graphic, and this is only for me, right? I'm not saying this is that the whole of the PR community is guilty of this. If you ask me to draw something, you're in big trouble. Sometimes those skills might be a different person.
But there are AI tools for that now as well, so we don't even know how to create them.
Yeah. It's not just about Johnny wasn't just talking about the graphics though as well. He was talking about, in addition to all of that, he was talking about, can we find the one key insight that will guide our strategy? And he gave a great example of a client to do with all these adverts that we get for people at the gym with their before and after bodies, and this one insight that actually this made people feel very uncomfortable, including this middle-aged man with too many beers inside my tummy. You know, we don't like to look at it, but this one data insight led them to an incredible campaign with one of their partners, where they did a before and after photo, but it was 10 minutes. It was just a little bit of exercise. Of course, the body hadn't changed, but the face looked happier and better, and it produced a fantastic campaign.
Yeah.
So it's not just the data visualization, it's also forming that insight. And of course, that insight is how measurement goes from being a backward looking thing to being a forward looking critical part of the planning process as well.
Yeah, nice touch. I think it was an Asics campaign, that one, wasn't it?
Exactly right.
Really, yeah. Good illustration of that. Yeah. And we're staying with you, Steph. And it's related to, I think, what you've just been talking about, but skills and confidence, but with a slightly nuanced element to that.
Yeah, there was some fascinating data from Stella Bales at Coverage Book. Really interesting data about confidence. You know, half of PR practitioners admit to presenting a metric that they do not fully understand to a client. With that,
I didn't believe that when I saw it, but there you go. I find that hard to believe, but yeah, it's an interesting stat. I'll give you that.
And also, you know, 3/4 of all managers and directors will be more likely to promote a junior member of the team with good data skills. I find it fascinating.
I definitely believe that. Yeah, with no doubt. Yeah.
You know, the younger ones are coming into the profession with these nascent digital analytics skills. I think that comes from being born plugged into Instagram and checking your analytics 2 seconds afterwards, which we've actually all become used to, but it just is inbred into our children who are now coming to the workplace. I think that's the piece about skills is fascinating. It's something that I care passionately about and why I'm very much involved in the educational resource creation over at AMEC, why I care about the next generation with looking at the rising stars and the next generation of stars in the profession after Richard and I have shuttled our one mortal coil.
But there was some interesting stuff you talked about, I think, around having that confidence to push back a little bit on potential clients who not possibly, probably not deliberately, but not who are not looking at or wanting the right KPIs or perhaps looking for spurious metrics and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but again, that boils down to confidence, doesn't it, often, and experience. Being able to have confidence. I mean, Richard's brilliant pieces in past years of, I don't want to mention the AV word again, but there I've done it, but, you know, the 23 or 24 or 25 million reasons why one shouldn't be focusing on them, particularly now we're in an age where perhaps focus is now on potential reach and impressions. And the point I think Jim made, and I've heard John O'Burke say this before, is just because an impression doesn't necessarily mean someone was impressed. It's about searching out that smaller number, which actually has much more meaning and credibility, and being able to confidently speak about those smaller numbers to your clients and upwards within your organisation, and being able to have trust in those smaller numbers, which I think are perhaps more meaningful to the
of course, group. Yeah. And I suppose your point is that if you know the data, then you're in a position to be able to push back a little bit, whereas if you don't have that confidence, that's probably not something you feel comfortable doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, we put out so much educational content at AMIC in order to educate the market to help build their confidence.
Now, Steph, you had a nice line earlier around contribution and attribution. But so just talk us through that one. What were you thinking around on that one?
Yeah, well, that spoke to some of the points that Jim was making in relation to this sort of program logic models, the ability to be able to look beyond just the outputs to consider outcomes and impact, but realizing that attribution is a really tough thing to do in any discipline, and perhaps on the paid space, they've been more confident in linking perhaps sales and having that sort of element of last click attribution in terms of measuring. That means that they then take responsibility for the wholesale when actually it was probably PR that fed the top of the funnel that caused the journey downwards to that last click.
Right. So it's trying to recognise the difference between the two, really. So you've got contribution, whereas everyone's saying, well, we contributed to this sale in one way or another, and you might try and put a percentage on that, whereas attribution is not in any way grey. That's one thing, quite often the paid element, saying, I did that, look at me, aren't I great? And that we're just saying that that's a little bit unrealistic, are we? Is that where you're getting to with that?
Yeah, it's the inability to be able to share that contribution amongst other parts of the marketing mix would have had would have started the reader or listener on that journey.
But that attribution modeling conversation, I mean, that's not a new conversation, is it? Now, just thinking about it, but you still find that people are using it to a fairly exclusive degree, are they, that the last point on the chain is claiming attribution for the sale?
That can often be the case. It just depends on the type of transaction and depends on the type of organization you're working with, particularly if you're working with e-commerce or those kinds of brands. You often find that that sort of last click element takes the medal for the wholesale.
Right. I'm not in your world. I find that quite remarkable that that type of fairly simplistic model still happens, because that's not the reality of how it works. Richard, do you have any
Google Analytics is all. It's what Google Analytics is all about, isn't it? I mean, there's a whole platform that's designed to show that Google creates all of the benefit that discounts anything to do with reputation, awareness, propensity to buy, whatever it might be that's further up the funnel that PR and comms spends a lot of its time doing. So that's, you know, that's the issue going on there.
And Richard, you're going to finish us off on a nice cozy one about education.
Oh, absolutely. Why not? Well, Ben, thank you for having Steph and me on the pod today. We appreciate it, because it really matters that everybody starts to speak with a common and a consistent voice about what best practice looks like for measurement and comms, for measurement and evaluation of comms, that we need to move beyond the counts and amounts, the vanity metrics, just measuring media and not looking to see whether what we're doing is actually having an effect against the organization. I think the time for excuses is over. I think back to Matt Neal's opening session, where he said, you know, the people in this room are going to change our industry and we need your help to do that. It's earned media's time is now. We need those insights. We need the proper measurement. We need the proper evaluation. We can't just count stuff. We've got to, in Jim McNamara's language, we've got to move beyond just the outputs of media coverage, and we've got to move to looking at the actual impact that we have on our target audience. We need to think about our target audience. This comes back to what Steph's talking about, which is confidence. We need to have the confidence that the work that we do has value, and we mustn't confuse counting and measuring activity, i.e. being busy fools, with demonstrating value to an organization where every pound and dollar is currently critical. So the whole industry needs to lean in now and pay attention. I think the huge success of the summit, where we had nearly 300 people there, we had people from agencies, from vendors, from in-house. We attracted, as I said, people from the World Bank and NATO. We had trade associations agreeing to work together. But, you know, Ben, the role of publishers as well, events, awards, everyone has to lean in and speak with this one common voice. And we all need to work to raise standards. And I think if we can all do that, not just the geeks, but the PR, comms, earned media, us, we will inherit the earth, and not the advertising giants of old. It's our time. But measurement, evaluation, data, strategy, planning of what we do is critical. So, you know, that's it. I think it's the importance of this. AMEC has a load of excellent resources from the Barcelona principles, the integrated evaluation framework, the, tutorial that Steph led on, the measurement maturity mapper, the planning guide, because planning's so critical to measurement. It's all there. It's all there. We'll check on where the STES piece is free. But it's definitely free if you become a member. And the good news about AMEC is we're an inclusive community. The spirit and the warmth at the summit was incredible. It didn't matter whether you were the newest practitioner from the smallest market or the oldest dog in the biggest market. The friendship, the collaboration, and the support for everyone was fantastic. We're going to Sofia in May next year, and we hope that as many practitioners as can possibly make it will come, because you won't regret it. It'll be great.
Thank you very much, Richard. And I should say we'll include those various elements of the frameworks and everything else that Richard mentioned there in the show notes. Quick final question. Just think about the last, I don't know, let's go 5 years. What would you give PR out of 10 when you're talking about its measurement progress? Steph first.
I'd say it's on about a 3 out of 10, and it moves in different speeds at different sizes. And I think that that all depends on the leadership of the PR department or agency leader. When you've got leaders who get it, then you've got teams who get it, and the investment is there and the will to demonstrate success is there. But PR is a big beast, and it comes in all manner of shapes and sizes. And so there's still much more to do and a huge audience to continue to communicate to, and to demonstrate that there is some really good best practice going on in the industry, supported by AMEC.
And Richard, but, where are you going? Steph, you've given it 3.
I think you've come up with a great reason of why single scores, you know, factored scoring systems aren't a good metric, because, you know, in pockets, I completely agree with Steph. If you try and sort of budget together, I'd probably be a bit more generous, but then we're being subjective in our measurement. But, you know, in pockets, it's a 1 or a 2. It's absolutely appalling. It's like 1975's called and asked for its measurement back. In other pockets, it's a 10, you know, and we had fabulous presentations by a number of brilliant organizations who just want to really learn and improve and drive best practice, because they know that it matters, and they're doing incredible work. So pockets of brilliance, pockets of frankly, you know, not good enough.
I have to say, when I speak to senior in-house people now, comms directors and the like, I am having conversations around measurement that I never thought I'd have with them. Their jobs depend on it. Their team's budget depends on it. That's what motivates their whole effort. Stefan, Richard, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the PR Moment podcast, produced in association with the Marketeers Network.
If you'd enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes and give us a decent rating.